Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning, it's Bruce Hall. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm Bruce. Roy Edwards is out of the studio today. Roy, you there? How's it going, man? You're in one ear and the music's in another. It's pretty cool. I have stereo stuff.
Technology.
Hey, and you know what? I have a pretty good voice, considering that our regional tournament was yesterday and I'm done for the year. Thank goodness.
So you're now retired. You're officially a retired high school wrestling coach. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm done for a while. I'll probably stay involved with little kid stuff, you know, helping the feeder program. I'll probably help with camps for the high school kids, and I'll probably help them raise money. And I'm sure I'll order their singlets because whoever comes in there is going to have to wear singlets I buy. Because and I have to have something to do with who replaces me, because, you know, the program basically was allowed to dwindle to next to nothing before I got there, and now we got a pretty good program. At least we have a great base and doing some things. We had like four guys wrestling Saturday. All four of them had a chance to go to states. All four lost their last match. One in overtime. He got completely robbed. And I'm not going to go into detail about it because I was asked to leave the auditorium after I got into a
I got into an official's ear.
After the match, well, here's what happened. And for you wrestling fans out there, for high school wrestling, you know what I'm talking about. Look, I wrestled at a very high level, NCAA Division I. And so I know what I'm doing. And this one official last year, for those of you who don't know this, I don't know what it's like in New York, but in the state of Virginia, an official at weigh-in, they do a skin check. Now, they're not dermatologists. They're not even doctors. Most of them don't have an IQ over 100. Some of them do, a lot of them. And I have a lot of good friends who are officials. And I've officiated before at a college. And I was a very good official. So I don't have a whole lot of patience for guys that don't work. Does that make sense to you, Roy? If you don't work the front, if you don't see the hands, if you don't, you know, at least put an effort out. This guy last year, my 106-pounder, had a great season. And his name's Kevin Argetta. He's a great kid. And last season, a red spot about the size of a tenth of a dime was on his chest. Now, this kid has perfect skin. And the kids that don't have perfect skin, that have acne problems, you could put five or six skin problems on their chest or back, and you'd never see them. You'd never see them anywhere. But this kid, this one official, pointed out that he thought it was ringworm. Well, it wasn't ringworm. My kid had a sheet for the skin. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm going to try to get through this in a hurry. And he had impetigo a week earlier, but he was completely cured, had been taking medication. He was ready to go, and you have to have a skin form filled out by a doctor. Well, we had not only filled out by a doctor, filled out by a dermatologist locally. So anyway, this guy calls, you know, the guy running the tournament. He brings a doctor in who isn't a dermatologist, and he says, oh, it looks like ringworm. No big deal. Just cover it up. Well, you can't cover it up. And as soon as he said that, the official said, well, he's ineligible. That was the entire postseason for this kid. That's talking about, you know, practicing November, December, January. This is happening in February, and now the kid's done for the year. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I didn't get real angry at that time. I tried to fix the problem. We even went to his dermatologist was out of town, so we went to 24-hour emergency places trying to get somebody to write something up that night saying he was eligible so he could come back and wrestle for third and be eligible. Couldn't get it done.
Wow.
Kid cried, you know, was totally upset. Don't blame him. I held that in. This guy, however, this official, every time I see him, he gives me dirty looks. Every time I finally said, when I'm done, I'm going to let this guy know what I think. Guess who called my heavyweights match last night? This guy. 6'6" redneck. Okay? And for those of you who don't know what a redneck is in New York, you haven't been around, okay? A redneck's a redneck. And it, not that rednecks are bad, but I'm just describing this guy. I even think he's a cop, which is fine.
Basically, so, to New Yorkers, it's anybody born below New York
Mason,
City.
below the Mason-Dixon line. So anyway, there's a lot of rednecks in Baltimore, too. But anyway, when a match is, he calls my kid. My kid, if he wins this match, he had made it all the way to the semis and lost a match. Now, if he wins this next match, he wrestles for third and fourth. So he gets to go to the state tournament. My heavyweight's 6'6", 270, 285. But he's a beginner. He's a second-year kid. He's a really good kid. Alex Smurda, I love the kid. And Alex was getting better every day this season. And he goes out there, and we're even after, you know, three periods. But in the third period, this kid was not only warned, he was penalized for stalling. You understand? So we got a point there. Then, in the overtime period, you have 1 minute sudden death. So they shake hands, they go at it. Their kid, the kid from this other school, backed up the entire period. Now, my kid was probably 40 or 50 pounds heavier than this kid. And my kid is walking in trying to get underhooks, gets nothing. Well, you've already called this kid for stalling and penalized him. Call him for stalling again and end the match, because we can't, if the kid's not going to wrestle with us, we can't do anything about it. Nothing got called. Then we go, we go down. This kid is up. He gets an escape. Then we're down and we have to score, do you understand, to extend the match. These kids have wrestled 8 minutes almost, and they're heavyweights. They're both tired. Nothing happened. Match gets over. My kid does something drastic, trying to get away, goes to his back, gets pinned. I walk up to this referee after the match, walking off the mat, and I go, "We weren't going to get that call from you anyway, were we?" And he looked at me with his stupid scowl and smile and goes, "No way. You were right." And I went, "You know what? On your best day, you effing suck." And I said that because, you know, he basically said I was right. He wasn't going to give us the call. Well, I was asked to leave, which is fine. I got to go home, be with my wife. And we were done for the tournament anyway. That was how I ended my tournament. I got tossed.
That was how you quit?
Bochy would... No. I was already done. But Bochy would be proud.
You were retired at that point, right?
Hey, yeah, I was done. I'm done. You know, I'm basically done. And all I got to do is show up and get locks ready for the baseball team, clean our locker room. I'll still clean the mat. I'll say, you know, I mean, it's...
Give out awards.
It was unbelievable. But for those people up there that know this, parents and coaches, this guy needs to... he needs to referee a wrestling match, you know, like I need to be president of the United States.
Like Roger Goodell needs to
like
run
Roger
the NFL.
Goodell needs to be. Oh, and by the way, we're going to talk about Roger Goodell later because Roy, I think there's a picture out there. Did you know how long after the Jacoby Jones touchdown run? 87 seconds. Oh, no. 97 seconds after the Goodell. After the Goodell. After the Jacoby Jones touchdown run, the power went out. And ironically enough, suspiciously enough, it takes exactly 86 seconds to walk from the commissioner's box down to the power source where it got cut off.
That's pretty funny.
Isn't that amazing? I'm just kidding. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. It's going to be a great day. We're going to, Roy, I've graded teams and we'll go back and forth and talk NFL for a while. You know Tony's calling in, and you're not in. So Tony's going to call Tony Mazur from Cleveland, who's going to talk about – he's going to talk about, you know, the former owner of the Browns, Art Modell, former owner of the Ravens, and we're going to get going there. For the first time in generations, though, Roy, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors – are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS. Phase.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
What's up, Roy? Roy, you there? Roy's in the restroom, evidently. This is Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I was talking about my little run-in with and a little story about high school wrestling and a regional tournament. I guess they still have sectionals in New York. A lot of kids that I wrestled with when I was in college at East Carolina University, which is in Greenville, North Carolina, thank you. That's definitely the South. But a lot of my New York buddies were from everywhere. They were from Syracuse, Rochester, Long Island, just outside the city in Westchester County. I'd say half of our team was from New York. Half of our team was from Virginia. In Virginia, we rolled. We were great on the mat. In New York, they rode legs and were great on their feet. We both were totally different as to how we made weight. And if you're a New Yorker in your 50s or 60s, you guys know how you made weight. I don't know how they did this, but, you know, I'm not even going to talk about it because it makes me sick just thinking about it. But it was a great mix in a great town where the weather was beautiful and some of the best times of my life. I was just reading somewhere. Roy, are you there? I was just reading somewhere.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Right. Did you hear me talking?
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, I just didn't hear you. But anyway.
Hey, hey, is there a weight limit for the heavyweights?
285. And they got two more pounds, which is 287. Now, when I wrestled, it was unlimited. You could weigh 500 pounds and be a state champion. All you had to do is go out there, grab a guy, throw him down, and lay on him, and you know, threaten to just stay on him, and you'd win. Nowadays, you can't weigh more than 285. As a matter of fact, Alex, my heavyweight, He had to lose about 10 pounds this year to get down. Now, he loves football, and he really needs to be about 15, 20 pounds lighter anyway. Well, we got a call. Tony, you on the line?
Yes, is he?
Hey, Tony. Hey, we got Tony Mazur, WKRK, in Cleveland.
And that's correct.
Tony, listen, thanks for coming on today. We were trying to hook up last week, but it's just as good we didn't because we went back and forth over the hardball so much. We almost didn't get any Major League Baseball done last week. But what we're going to talk about today with you, because you are the expert. You can follow Tony at Tony Mazur, M-A-Z-U-R, on Twitter. He's amazing. He's fun to talk to. He's out and about all the time. And you're a producer on KRK, right?
That's correct, yeah. I'm in the thick of things.
Now, let me ask you this. Are you still doing the Kylie and Boom show in the morning?
Well, I'll be back doing it soon. I'm kind of like the jack of all trades, bouncing around producing, doing some on-air stuff. So it's I'm bouncing around every now and then. But and I'm covering the teams. I covered the Browns last year, which I got to tell you was a real treat.
Absolutely. I mean, well, let's go to the Browns. Let's start with the Browns, then we'll talk Moondell. How's that? And we'll bring you back on if you'd like. If we've got time, I'll bring you back on for a few minutes after the break, which is in about, 10 minutes. But let's talk a little bit about the Cleveland Browns. Now, I got to tell you, as a handicapper, I liked what I saw with the Browns. The Browns generally were overachievers this year. Not so much offensively, but they stayed in so many games defensively and special teams. Break down what you thought about the Browns and which direction they're going. The only thing I feel so sorry for you about is Norv Turner is going to be there at least a year. And he's not, well, he's no fun, Tony.
Well, you talk about the Browns, and I look back to last season, and last season just was meaningless. At this point, because what happened was just going over a little bit, since the Browns have been back since '99, they were they had the team purchased by Al Lerner. Al Lerner passed away, gave it to his son, who was an absentee owner. He owns a team over in England, and he spent more time focusing on his soccer team than the football team that his father pretty much passed down to him.
Easier to fix games over there.
Well, yeah, he's not a good owner over there either, and. So he sold the team to Jimmy Haslam from Pilot Flying J,
right.
And basically this past season I think was an audition for a lot of these guys to see who they'd rather keep on board. So now the entire coaching staff has been blown out. The entire front office has been blown out. They entered the season with Tom Heckert, who was bigwig out in with the Eagles,
right?
And then had Pat Shurmur, who's now the offensive coordinator for the Jets. I don't know how. Someone, please explain that to me.
Well, you know, you can't make heads or tails of the Jets. It's just a dysfunctional organization.
Well, you know, they'll probably end up with Manti Te'o. You know how the Jets are.
Why not? Well, maybe they can get an imaginary owner too. Because they could use one, because Woody sucks.
Yeah, I think the imaginary ones are a little better than the reality. So, but here's the next thing is, though, as much as we like the direction that Jimmy Haslam, who's a guy who's a more hands-on owner.
He's a sharp guy, too.
He is. But the problem is now he's kind of confided in Joe Banner. And Joe Banner's been a guy that is not well-liked in Philadelphia. It's kind of split right now. A lot of people giving him the benefit of the doubt in Cleveland. He is a smart business guy. But I think, and this is my theory,
right,
he's going to try to prove to the NFL, prove to the team, prove to everybody else that he can do football decisions.
Right.
And that's why Mike Lombardi was brought on. And I think Lombardi is, in a sense, a puppet because Lombardi, if you take a look at his track record, is not good. And you can say what you want about Sebastian Janikowski drafting him in the first round and DeMarcus Russell first overall, even though I guess there was more Al Davis's line of work. But then he was the GM of the Browns, and a lot of Browns fans do not like him because of some draft picks, touchdown Tommy Vardell out of Stanford.
Yeah, you know, that was a strange pick, too, because he wasn't even that big, you know?
No,
he was a power guy. He wasn't a real fast guy. He's a Stanford kid.
And the main reason that a lot of Browns fans don't like Mike Lombardi is he was instrumental in because 20 years ago now. Bernie Kosar, who is he's huge in Cleveland, great guy, great in the community. Everybody loves him. Loved him when he came out of Boardman, which is outside of Youngstown, as well as Miami.
Super guy.
He's excellent. And Bernie Kosar was, we heard the term diminishing skills. And Bill Belichick, he and Bill Belichick didn't get along. Belichick wanted Vinny Testaverde back then, wanted to find any reason to get rid of Bernie Kosar. And Belichick contacted his good friend, Mike Lombardi, to put together a greatest hits, or greatest misses, I should say, tape of Bernie with his diminishing skills. Sent it to Art Modell, convinced him to cut Bernie Kosar. So Bernie gets cut, gets picked up right away by the Cowboys, and win the Super Bowl, and Bernie takes a knee and gets a Super Bowl ring. So needless to say, it's very confusing, just basically going on about the Browns. The front office, up in the air, but a lot of Browns fans are happy with North Turner so far because they like his track record. They like Ray Horton from the Cardinals. And so far, they're giving the benefit of the doubt to Rob Chudzinski, who's another first-year coach the Browns have hired.
You know, let me ask you this, Tony. What do you think? Chud's okay, and you know him better than I do because he was in Cleveland. But everything that I read about some of the moves he made and the way that he coaches, right now it looks like he's willing to just kind of let bring in some good guys. And those aren't the only two good coaches he's brought in. I mean, he's brought in. Who did he bring in for special teams? Didn't he bring a real good guy in for special teams?
Offhand, I'm not sure.
He's doing a good job so far. And you know what? Guys that delegate, young guys especially, if they learn how to do that as head coaches and just let the guys do what they want to do and make sure that the GM – the thing about Lombardi, the only thing I can think of is they needed – a conduit between the two gentlemen you talked about. Maybe they were going to let him. You know, the nice thing about working on TV, you got to be prepared, right? Just like the radio. And if you don't do your homework, you're not going to be very good on the radio or TV. And I think that they figured that Lombardi was kind of like that guy out there with a little bit of experience that maybe knew more about present talent than they did. So,
I hope Lombardi spending those few years on the NFL Network is going to help him because the theory is it's like why didn't he have a job for all these years and then now he's getting back into it, and that's where the confusing part is Lombardi brought on as a like I mentioned, a puppet, or is he a guy who's now prepared, stepped back and looked at it from a TV standpoint,
right,
and then analyzed himself and then said, this is what I'll do different this time?
He's he's a likable guy, and he's a big Dunkin' Donuts guy. I know you follow him on Twitter, and you're stupid if you don't follow Lombardi, because let me tell you, when he broke the Spygate thing in New England, did you notice who all the guys were that got what's the guy's name? That's the karate guy, that's the little guy that's always on CBS or ESPN. I'm trying to think, what's his name? But anyway, him and Lombardi always get the scoops. Have you noticed that? They get the scoops. And I'm telling you right now, the reason they get the scoops from the NFL office is because they dropped Spygate. They had the most, if you read the book, both of those guys were knee-deep into Spygate. Then all of a sudden, it's gone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So Lombardi is connected, and that's not a bad thing in the NFL. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. However, if I was in Cleveland and I had access to Lombardi, I'd have to bring up a few Spygate questions, because I'd like to know why you just stopped talking about it and why it went away. You know what I mean? That's just me.
That's a good point, because Lombardi kind of, some of the media in Cleveland has been against Lombardi due to his what happened before the Browns had left in '95, and so he kind of came a little bit defensive during his press conference. We had him on the Fan here,
right?
As well as we had Jim Nance, and Jim Nance
was in it too. You're right; he was dead in it.
Yeah, Jim Nance is a good friend of Lombardi's, and said, "Look, Cleveland, this guy's a smart football guy. Just hang on, just trust him, this and this and this." And of course, we've heard from people. As much as I like Jim Nance, I don't want to be dictated to and saying that.
No. I don't think, you know what? I don't think Nance, ever since his divorce, I think Nance is a different guy. I don't think you can dictate to Nance. Now, he's a company guy with CBS. He'd hate to lose the Masters, I can tell you that. But I think Nance is the kind of guy that sooner or later, when he comes out with a good book, it's going to be great, in my opinion. All right, I tell you what, we're going to be, let's talk a little bit about Modell. Give me your five, we've got 2 minutes left. Give me a good starter on Modell. We'll catch you when you come back, let you finish up on it, and then we'll briefly talk about Cleveland, because I'm going to spring training in Arizona, so I'll be a good year watching them. You know, because they share a stadium, I want to say, with the White Sox? I think they do, in Goodyear, Arizona.
Cincinnati.
Oh, Cincinnati Reds, that's right.
Yep.
God, I love that that mascot of theirs. But anyway, talk about Modell. He leaves Cleveland for Baltimore. Why did he leave? They wouldn't build him a stadium?
Well, there were many. Yeah, that was one of the reasons. And he left basically because his business, he didn't have another business. Like Jimmy Haslam's with Pilot Flying J, so he has income coming in from other ventures. Dan Gilbert, who's the owner of the Cavs, also owns Quicken Loans. He owns the
Missouri
Monsters hockey team. He owns
Fathead.
He has stake in our new casino that's downtown.
So he's diverse. He's diverse.
And what happened with Modell is when the Indians left, because there were many dirty dealings. So it's not all Art Modell's fault as to why the Browns had left, but it was the fact that the Indians had been in that cavernous old stadium for 81 games a year. And then when that leaves, the luxury boxes, everyone's leaving, season tickets, all of that income is gone. His business was the Browns and the stadium. And when you only have 10 games a year, including preseason, he felt that there was no other way.
Right. No, I hear you. Hey, can you hold on for us for a couple of minutes?
Yes, I can.
All right, great, Tony. We'll be right back with you. I gotta make some money here. The ultimate in personal jewelry service at Twin Jewelers. Customers become friends, and everyone gets treated like family. With locations in Yonkers and Pleasantville. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. Roy's going to be coming on here as soon as we're done with Tony Mazur. Roy's at another location today, getting ready for his stuff. You can follow Roy on...
At Sports Man Cave.
At Sports Man Cave. I was going to say Roy G at SportsMancave.com. That's probably his email address.
That's not it.
Roy, anyway, we'll be on soon. Tony, you there?
Yes, I am.
It's great. Now, listen, keep talking about Modell. So he was frustrated because he wasn't making really any money. And if he wanted to be competitive in the Cleveland market, he had to spend some money. And he did that for a long time, correct?
He spent money, but the problem is he went bankrupt. He went bankrupt in Cleveland, and which is the strange part about it is how does a man who is – you think about the NFL, and the NFL has gotten even bigger since 1995. How do you lose money on two – NFL franchise, not just one, because he lost money on the Ravens. How do you do that? And it's just bad business deals. He had to take out a loan to pay for Andre Rison, which was just an awful signing in '95.
Yeah.
But there were many, many aspects with Art Modell that he should not be in the Hall of Fame, and it's not just about the move. I'll just go over a little bit. He was in his 30s when he bought the Browns. I believe it was for $4 million. I don't know what it is with inflation. I'm not a math major, but he bought the Browns and immediately locked horns with Paul Brown. Now, Paul Brown, George Halas, Vince Lombardi, some of these guys that were instrumental in making the game what it is today. And Modell was this guy from New York who comes in and says, no, I want to operate the team my way. He was a Jerry Jones before Jerry Jones. He was Al Davis right around the same time. And
Paul Brown was also an excellent football coach, something that Jerry Jones isn't.
He was, and Modell thought he had a feeling that the game had passed him by. Now, he still had Jim Brown on the team and Frank Ryan, a quarterback, and with Blanton Collier as the coach, they won the championship over the Colts in 1964. And Cleveland sports has not won anything since then. And Modell eventually, again, locked horns with Jim Brown when he was filming The Dirty Dozen, and Jim Brown says, well, then screw it, I'm retiring now. Because Modell told Jim Brown to come to training camp, and you better be here. And he's like, no, you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm Jim Brown. Yeah. And, I mean, as much as that is egotistical as that is, it's Jim Brown. Jim Brown can kind of dictate what he wants to do. So, and the Browns really did not win much, and they didn't win anything in the rest of the 60s, 70s. They competed well in the 80s, in the 90s. And you take a look at the body of work of Art Modell, other than being instrumental in offering his team to play in the first Monday Night Football game in 1970, and he did some things to help the NFL reach out with TV, Art Modell is not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. Because everyone I've talked to who says he should be in the Hall of Fame doesn't give a good, solid reason. I've never sat there before the Browns left, where I sat there and looked in the box and saw Art Modell's face and said, that guy's a Hall of Famer.
Well,
just an owner who had tenure.
Well, let me just tell you something that I'm aware of, because I was in the sports entertainment business for almost 30 years. When the Ravens went to Tampa to play the Giants in the Super Bowl in 2000, you know, and the Ravens had this phenomenal defense. They'd just gone there. A lot of stuff going on. Art Modell, I mean, there's a way that you get to go to Super Bowls. You have to know who has the tickets. You have to purchase the tickets from the people that have them. Each team gets X amount of tickets to a Super Bowl. What they decide to do with the tickets is entirely up to them. In my opinion, from the contacts I had in my business, Art Modell sold almost all of his Super Bowl tickets on the secondary market when they went to Tampa, Baltimore. But he did take all the players, his entire staff that came with him from everything. Do you understand what I'm saying? Took care of all those people.
Losing money.
Yeah. And he put it in his pocket probably. And I'm just saying that's probably my opinion. But my whole point is this. When you go even to a new city, right, like Baltimore, who, you know, lost the Colts, they're already upset about in the NFL to begin with. Now you get to go to the Super Bowl in 2000, okay? Don't you want to make those tickets available to your season ticket holders through a lottery system? They did, but I'm going to tell you something, Tony, and I'm not kidding. It was $3,800 to get in the door on Saturday night and Sunday morning. This year in New Orleans, it was like a $1,200 get-in. You know, 12, 13 years later. That's because there were no tickets available. Now, New York, the Giants, that's the NFL's team. You know that. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out. Look, John Mara thinks he's the commissioner anyway. I would say that John Mara has more clout than Goodell, easily. He probably makes more money, too. But it's after board meetings. I'm just saying, when I heard that happen, I didn't like Modell. I mean, as soon as I was calling people that I knew were season ticket holders in Baltimore trying to buy their Super Bowl tickets, and they were going, I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I didn't win the lottery. I didn't get it. I mean, I'm telling you, there were 50 I didn't get it to every one I found. And that's just not right. You know what I mean?
That's not at all surprising. Art Modell did a lot of that. He ended up losing money for so many years. And that's why I just feel that he is not a Hall. He's not. I mean, you can make a case. Well, here's a good example here. Why isn't Irsay in the Hall of Fame, who also moved the team? But why do we have to talk about Art Modell? Just because they won, now have won two Super Bowls, but just because they won a Super Bowl with him.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when the Browns had left in 95, they were actually a winning team. They came off an 11-5 season, went to the playoffs, and then the next year, I believe they were 5-3 at the point when they announced the move. And after that, they completely collapsed in order to get Ray Lewis.
Right.
So, because for anybody to think, well, the Browns could have had Ray Lewis and Jonathan. Nope, they couldn't have had any of these guys. Because the Browns, they went into tank mode.
That's
they
right.
They went into the tank, and then that was it. And they eventually built up the Ravens with Ozzie Newsome. That was another thing was why we should put Art Modell in the Hall of Fame, because he hired Ozzie Newsome because he was instrumental in getting an African American to be a general manager.
That's probably the best thing he ever did. Probably the best thing he ever did, because that guy is the best. He's the best.
He is, but I'm not going to put him in the Hall of Fame just because. Ozzie Newsome's a very smart football guy, and
he's also one of the best tight ends in NFL history too. I mean, well, I think he's got a lot of. Is he not in the HOF, Ozzie?
Ozzie's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Modell does. I agree with you, and now I understand why. I really didn't know because you get CBS's spin on it, you get ESPN's spin on it. They all talk about what a great guy Modell is. I disagree. I didn't like him. I haven't liked him since 2000. When I found out none of those people had tickets, period.
Modell was great with TV. He knew how to say the right quotes at the right time. He was they loved him when NFL was on NBC. And if you can recall, I think it's on YouTube. Bob Costas's interview with Art Modell.
Yeah,
and it was even Costas who's he's another company man, but he hammered Art Modell and said, "How are you losing money on this team? Don't say that you can't. You haven't earned any money. How does this happen?" And it still is not really even explained that well.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough for telling us about that. And look, we got about a minute and a half left. Give me your best minute and a half, would you, Tony, on the Cleveland Indians right now?
The Indians are not contenders. I think they're pretenders. They had to roll out the carpet to Nick Swisher, I believe, $14 million a year.
That's unbelievable.
He's a 250 guy, though this entire offseason has been overpaying mediocre free agents like Mike Napoli and Shane Victorino. They're all getting major contracts. But I think the Indians, they have something to build upon, Terry Francona, the new manager. But they're signing these low-risk, high-reward guys. Jason Giambi just got signed to a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. They just got Brett Myers, who was in the bullpen last year, and they're slating him out to be the number three guy.
Yeah,
they still have they have no pitching right now in Justin Masterson.
I was looking at their roster. It's horrible.
It's not good, and I think they're going to, I mean, with Mark Reynolds and Jason Kipnis, Drubal Cabrera, Lonnie Chisenhall, Michael Brantley, they'll put up some numbers, Carlos Santana, they'll put up numbers at the plate, but they have no pitching to back it up, and the bullpen has been a little shaky. as good as they have been the past couple of years, I think it's going to be strange to look at. So I think the Indians, I even have the Kansas City Royals actually faring better than the Indians.
It's going to be close. Listen, I can't thank you enough. I've got to do something here. Tony Mazur, WKRK. In Cleveland. Thank you so much, Tony, for coming on. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony, M-A-Z-U-R. Tony, looking forward to having you on once the season starts.
That's first. Thanks, Wes.
All right, buddy. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230. WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. Roy.
Yeah.
Time for you to do a soliloquy, buddy. Hey, listen up. Tell everybody what you've been doing this week. Tell them about your new show. Tell people how they can follow your show, what night, what time. And let's talk Super Bowl, because it was, you know, as bad as the first half was, the second half was pretty good. And I really think that the league pulled the plug. Matt told me to say that. But I kind of halfway believe it, because I'll tell you a very serious story later, but tell everybody how they can listen to your show, your new show.
Well, yeah, we are in the process and of getting everything together with smcradio.com. We're adding new shows every week, so I've been working on that, working on different intros for some big shows we got coming up on Expansion and WVU Sports, which would be pretty cool. And the show is called that I do is called Out at Second. It's a sports comedy show. We do we basically do parodies of the sports stories, and it is 9 p.m. on Wednesday nights, and you can go to smcradio.com for that, or sportsmancave.com for those if you want. It'll just send you a link to SMC Radio. But, yeah, and then for the plug, you say it was a boring first half. I think it was a great first half, because I had the Ravens plus four, so I was jumping on my couch.
Yeah, well, you weren't jumping on your couch when San Francisco was flying down the field there at the end. Although you probably would have still covered. No, you know, I mean, that game, I'm trying to think. You know, last week we had Russ on. And Russ, what did he say? He said they're twins. He said everything is so equal, it's going to be it wouldn't surprise him if it was an overtime game. And we almost saw an overtime game. I mean, if San Francisco goes in for two, it's 31-all. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, that would have been a lot different. The safety made some interesting handicapping kind of fun for a few people, and not, because, you know, there's certain things you can do when lines move. Like when the line was 4, 4.5, 3, 3.5, you can take a +4 and a -3, and there's really almost no way you can lose money. Does that make sense? But – you know, and you can try to hit the middle, but you needed to be on a half. It never went to 2.5. And if it had gone to 2.5, you could have won everything. You could have won the -2.5 and the +4 and hit the middle, which would have been phenomenal, but it didn't happen. But I got to tell you, after Jacoby Jones ran back that second half kickoff, I mean, we can talk about the first half, and we should.
Jacoby, do you think that Joe Flacco should have been MVP of that game?
No, I thought Jacoby Jones set a record, and he should have been MVP of the game. That's no, it's a quarterback thing.
Yep.
You know what? Hey, that damn racist NFL, I swear. You know, Redskins, they need to change their name.
Oh, man.
You know, they need to hire some black coaches. It's ridiculous.
Are you in a mockery here? Is this
No, I'm being perfectly honest. I mean, come on. I mean, how many
– I'm on the other side of that.
Hey, how many positions did they fill this year with head coaches? And they had to take guys in college just because, you know, they were white. I mean, come on.
Is that really – you believe that?
No,
that
of course not. No, I don't. But I kind of do. I mean, here's my point. I listened to –
today is Bruce Hall's wrong opinion.
It doesn't matter. Listen, I listened to somebody last week. I'm trying to think who it was. It was an African-American sports commentator. I can't remember who it was, but it was a guy I listened to all the time. And when I think of his name, I'll just – blurt it out, okay? Because that's what old people do. We blurt stuff out. But anyway, he was saying, look, it's not like, he goes, I don't really believe it, but they really need to do a better job of this Rooney Rule. Because this Rooney Rule is a joke.
Well,
and it is. It is.
I mean, well, the Rooney Rule.
And they need to fix it for assistant coaches, too.
Well, that's the key there.
I agree.
The assistant coaches and the college head coaches. If you want to see more African-American or Asian or Hispanic, any type of minority coach, if you want to see more head coaches of minorities in the NFL, then fix it at the collegiate level.
Well, here's the problem at the collegiate level, right? The problem at the collegiate level is there's still a lot more white coaches than black coaches and board of directors at Division I college level. Still too many white people and not enough black people there.
Well,
so, and that's
my point, is that if you're not going to get one of the top jobs in the country if you don't work your way up the ladder. And the only way you can work your way up the ladder is
an assistant coach.
College assistant coaches.
Right.
So you can't blame the NFL for something that's a trickle down.
No, I agree. I agree. Well, let's talk first about the first quarter.
Yeah.
Flacco comes out, he's hot, he's like 3 for 4, goes down the field, they score. Throws almost the identical pass that he threw in the playoff game to your boy Anquan Boldin, who I love, by the way.
He was a must sign,
this is the greatest receiver that runs a 4.8 40 in the NFL. Because he doesn't get much separation, but he's so strong, all he needs is just a little bitty window. And if he gets his hands on it, you can't even knock it out of his hands. Because guys were covering him really well, except that one touchdown. They were getting their hands on the ball. They were even stripping, and he just holds on to the ball. Mm-hmm. Torrey Smith, same thing. So, anyway, it's 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. And right now, they didn't really take that long. Now, San Francisco made two big errors. They threw a 20-some-odd yard pass down the field, and there was a penalty for they didn't cover up the tight end. So it was an illegal procedure. They bring it back. They get nothing, right? Yeah. Then they fumble the ball after a pretty decent drive when they get to kickoff, go down the field, and they've got the guy that I said I thought was going to be the biggest difference, the kid from Oregon, the running back.
Yeah.
He fumbles the ball, coughs it right up. So now they get the ball back. And, they go down the field. Why don't you pick it up there? I mean, did you think in the first half it was over when they kept scoring?
No. And I if you guys follow me on Twitter, then you know that I tweeted that out. What I said was
– They had them where they wanted them?
what I kept thinking was I went to WVU, so I relate everything to WVU sports. Now
– My condolences.
The WVU-Georgia game – in the Georgia Dome, it was a Sugar Bowl, I think it was 2006, where WVU blew them out in the first half, and the party kind of started then, and it was the big game, and then you started to see the very fast comeback. Georgia scored some 14 unanswered points or something, to this game, the Super Bowl game, had that feeling to me at halftime. I knew that San Francisco was going to make a run. There's too much emotion in a big game like this.
Well, they've done it all season.
Just lay down. Exactly, and they've done it all season. They're a very young team with a lot of jitters coming into this game. You have a quarterback who might as well be a rookie. He'd only started, 9 games prior to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, he looked a little jittery for sure. Now, in their defense – I like what Baltimore did with their offense because they went right at him with a pass. And that's how you score against San Francisco. You're not going to score banging the ball too much.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
And Colin Kaepernick started to get more on a roll. I mean, his rushing yards in the first half were not really there. Baltimore did a very good job of containing that read option.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he kept the ball one time, and he misread it 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
He handed the ball to Gore, and he got killed.
He was nervous,
Yeah, and he was.
And the whole Baltimore Ravens plan towards that, and Baltimore had the distinct advantage of going up against the read option in the regular season when they played the Washington Redskins in RG3. So they've seen this offense before, and it beat them before. So I'm sure they studied a heck of a lot of tape from the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm sure they studied a whole lot of tape of when they played the Redskins to prepare for that read option. And it showed because their outside linebackers were blitzing straight towards the quarterback when they lined up in that pistol read. So, they had
him looking at him for sure. Well, the thing that I liked the most about what Flacco did was he just looked so calm.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't even look nervous in the least. Of course, he never does. You know, and the thing about what they did, you know, with throwing to Dennis Pitta, I mean, what helped them was using Dixon. Now, you know me, I like Dixon, but he didn't really, he kind of disappeared this year for a while. And he's got great hands, but he doesn't always run good routes. And there was a time when they weren't even playing Dixon much. This year,
yeah.
At least I wasn't seeing him play much. Well, it was always Pitta, you know? Right.
They have the, you know, they have that. They have the two tight end set, and they're both very good, you know, tight ends. They're both very good pass-catching tight ends. Usually a team will have a blocking tight end and a pass-catching tight end. You know, the Ravens just have that. They have that extra guy in there, so they split time a lot. But you're right, Dennis Pitta seemed to be the guy.
Well, Kaepernick made a great throw to Delanie Walker right before the end of the first half to get him like a, I don't know, 28, 30-yard gain. And then they kick a field goal to make it 21-6. That really did make it a lot better. Then you had, what, a 45-minute halftime show with Beyonce and everybody else. And, you know, I watched some of it. I didn't think it was all that great, but she looked great. I didn't really care too much for Destiny's Children or whatever they are. Destiny's Child, the two other girls that she started out with. Yeah, I mean, to me, they look like sevens, and she was a 12 on a 10 scale.
Yeah.
Gosh, she's pretty, you know. So anyway, that was the good news. We taped it, and later in the night, I got to play it back a couple times. I'm an old man. I'm Bruce Hall, and I'm a dirty old man. So anyway, so it's 21-6 at halftime.
Yeah.
And we figure what, San Francisco's got to make a hold first series in the second half. They've got to make a hold. They got to get the ball back, and they need to score. Well, and then, Roy, tell us what happens.
With about 2 minutes left in the first half.
Yeah.
Flacco completely underthrows a wide open Jacoby Jones, who comes back for the ball. Not enough people.
Oh, that's right. That made it 21-3.
21-3. I mean, that is one of the key turning points of this game. You know, that's a 56-yard bomb, completely underthrown. Jacoby Jones comes back 5 or 6 yards,
and he bobbled it just a little bit too. He didn't really catch it right when it got there.
Yeah, he's on the ground, does a somersault, gets up, shakes two guys, and comes in for the score. That, to me...
And the gay-bashing cornerback, Culver, stands still, flat-footed, and doesn't even get a hand on him.
Oh, I know. I mean, that to me was the turn...
Bad day. God made sure he had a bad day.
If that's not the turning point, about 2 minutes later was the turning point, which is what you're talking about. When that same guy, Jacoby Jones, who, when you look at all of the big plays and all the turning point... You know, momentum shifts that I see in this game, they all come from Jacoby Jones. He ties. Well, first they said he broke it with 109, and they took it back.
Yeah, they took it back. You know what? I thought it was 109, but I guess, they look at the ball. His foot was on the 9. Roy, you hear that music? We're going to be back in a minute on AM 1230 WFAS. Bruce Hall's Second Opinion with Roy Edwards. We'll be right back.
Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let him off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Yeah, San Francisco 49ers sure let the Baltimore Ravens off the hook last weekend. We're gonna get to those final two or three minutes. Excuse me. Here, I'm still the aftermath of my last wrestling tournament in high school for a while. Roy, the second half, when it started out, with that 108/109-yard touchdown run on the kickoff from Jacoby. First of all, no one touched him, which is probably exciting if you're a sprinter because you don't have to worry about any bruises or getting hurt or any of that stuff. But he runs it in the end zone. It's 28-6, And 78 seconds later, no, not even two
wait,
minutes.
Wait,
Roy.
Yeah, we have to talk about this. The nicest part of that, did you see him watching himself on the big board?
Well,
that has to be the coolest thing to be able to see yourself running
on the big board.
But,
see the guy that's chasing you. See the guy that's chasing you. Stop running. That was kind of nice. It took him 10.8 seconds to score. They said
that's not that bad.
No, that's running. That's running a 9900 yard dash with equipment on. And a football in your arms.
Yeah, not bad.
Now, he's probably a 9.4 sprinter, wouldn't you say? Jones, probably 9.3, 9.4. I'm pretty sure he ran track in college.
That's
something you can look up while we're talking about the game, Roy. The thing I like the most about these two brothers playing each other is there were no surprises. Everybody knew what everybody was going to do for the most part. You know what I mean? John and Jimmy probably talk all year long, and then, you know, the fact that they got in the game together was just gravy. Would Jimmy have rather played someone else? Oh, yeah, I think so, because to me what that game proved was who the better coach was. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
You're right
about Jacoby Jones. He originally enrolled on a track scholarship at Southeastern Louisiana University in 2012.
Yeah, he's from Louisiana because his mom made Cajun food for all of his teammates all week long.
Very cool.
That's where Brian Mitchell's from. He's from north of there. He's from near Baton Rouge. And, God, when we go to the Super Bowl in New Orleans usually, when I'd go with Brian, he would go buy crawfish. We would eat them every day, like pounds and pounds and pounds of them. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I've got Roy Edwards from SportsManCave.com and Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on the phone. Actually, he's in the studio, but he's in his own studio today.
Yes, sir.
And I'm over here with Matt, and it's a beautiful day. It's just kind of cold here. Oh, they're only getting 3.6 feet of snow in Boston. What if they, what if this had been Super Bowl?
3 feet, 4 inches.
I think they should have a Super Bowl in Boston. What would they be doing if they had a Super Bowl in Boston right now? They almost shut down the Dallas Super Bowl because of 3 or 4 inches of snow. Do you remember that, Roy?
Yeah.
I mean, they had no sand, no chemicals, no nothing. You couldn't drive down the road without running into somebody that had stopped right in the middle of the road.
And next year, that could be a real possibility. I mean, next year, the Super Bowl is at MetLife.
They'll be better prepared for that than they were for the bad storm on the New Jersey coast. I can promise you that.
At least there'll be no power outages.
So how many people out there in the audience think Governor Christie is a little overweight? I've got my hand up. I didn't realize until they showed. He's got to weigh 350 pounds, and I don't even think he's 6 feet tall. He's a big boy. He ate a donut on Letterman, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to do much for – and how can he get mad at people making fun of his weight if he's going to pull a donut out of his pocket and eat it? I mean, come on.
It's probably a joke, right? Parody joke?
Well, it kind of was, but then he got mad.
Poke fun of yourself?
If you're going to goof yourself, let everybody else goof you.
He's like, yeah, this is totally a joke. I'm not hungry at all.
I'm not hungry, but this donut sure is tasty. By the way, Matt, you have 10 more donuts to eat. I'm not taking any of them home. Carol will beat me when
Speaking
I get home.
Speaking of donuts, have you seen the Delonte West video that I posted at sportsmancave.com?
Of course not. You know me. I'm doing my 30,000th tweet today. So if I send you a tweet today, I need you to retweet it, everybody, because I'm celebrating my 30,000th tweet probably mid to late afternoon today.
I don't know if I should, I feel like you have a problem, Bruce.
I don't have a problem. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do anything. I don't even coach wrestling anymore.
I think you need to take up both so you can kick your Twitter habit, though.
I'm gonna start hitting golf balls every day.
Are you really at 30? Oh, my goodness.
I'm at 30,000 tweets, 29.
The funniest part about what you just said is you're going to hit your 30,000th tweet sometime this afternoon.
Probably. I got 50 more till the.
He
has a notebook here that he's.
I'm going to get Bryce Harper to retweet me. I won't have to ever send another tweet to anybody. I'll just send him to Bryce. Bryce is great. Bryce has a problem too.
I'm at 7,600 tweets, and I was on Twitter before you were.
Yeah, I know, but you're. can I tell you what I typed 120 words a minute when I was like 14 years old? So I don't send any tweets hardly ever on my phone because that's hard. Because I can't type on my phone.
That's why Twitter was invented. Is for
guys like me.
It was originally for people to keep up with their celebrities while they were on the go. It was originally an application.
I'm the celebrity.
It was actually a group messaging platform. That's why it's 140 characters, so it can be under the text messaging.
See, when you call it that, it's not even that exciting. Hey, listen, Roy, let's talk about the third quarter. The Ravens blow. Well, now, first of all, Roy, what do you think? Why do you think the blackout happened? Listen to this music.
If you were in downtown New Orleans that weekend, you would have walked into a bar. And you would have seen a picture of Roger Goodell's face above beer handles and bar keeps, and it would have said, "Do not serve this man."
He never had to leave his hotel, probably.
I'm dead serious about that. That is an actual picture. You can find that. It might be up at Sportsman Cave. I can't remember if it got put up or not. But I think that Goodell, I think the fix was in. I think Goodell was upset that a Super Bowl was going to be remembered about being in New Orleans. They had a record-breaking kickoff return, which coincidentally was changed to a tied record, so we wouldn't hear about it as much. I think he turned up the power to make New Orleans look bad.
No, I think he turned the power off to get the ratings up and get a closer game. Because you know what he had to stop? Old Mother Mo. Because the momentum was with the Ravens. They went up 28-6 on the opening kickoff. There's no way that was not an NFL slug that pulled the... It might not have been Goodell, but I bet it was somebody that knew Goodell. Look what happened, Roy. It was 28-6. They scored 17 unanswered points to San Francisco 49ers. What do you think? I think. Man, we don't care what you think. We're not talking about soccer.
I just wanted to say, during that blackout... Twitter went crazy. I think that they had to hit some kind of record with how many people were tweeting about it.
The big blue page was up.
They must have known something that would happen. You know, give them something to talk about, and they talked.
You know, Michael Crabtree, God bless him, who, by the way, got off on a he allegedly sexually molested somebody in a hotel room. Evidently, they dropped charges. There was nothing to that. Either that or somebody got paid a lot of money. A poor punt by Sam Koch and a 32-yard return from Ted Ginn Jr. set up the Niners' next drive to the Baltimore 20. Two plays later, Gore glided into the end zone from 6 yards out as Walker wiped out safety Ed Reed with a gorgeous block. It really looked good for San Francisco then. It did. I tell you what, in the fourth quarter, Roy, at the end of the game, as they went down there, I was really thinking that – you remember how quickly – I mean, Baltimore is exhausted. Haloti Ngata was gone in the fourth quarter. He got hurt at the end of the third quarter. He was gone. Ray Lewis was nowhere to be found in the fourth quarter. He was in and out, but he wasn't making tackles. He was slow. What were they doing, San Francisco? They were beating them physically up. They were running the ball right down their throat. All they had to do is run the football. We're going to be back in a minute. I've got something I got to say. This is very important. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. I'm with Roy Edwards, and we'll be back in a minute on AM 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to brucehallsports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. This is Bruce Hall. I've got Roy Edwards in his studio today. So if you hear us not 100% perfect with
Whoa.
You know what? Let me just tell you, Matt.
We're 113% here, Bruce.
Yeah, there is no such thing. Hey, listen,
we're touching
Roy,
114.
I was telling Matt that this is like one of the best shows we've ever had, and sometimes I like it when you're somewhere else because... When I'm talking to you, I don't have to look at you looking at Matt. I can, you're not even here, so I know you're listening. You always listen. We talk about the radio and how people that are very smart listen to the radio. They just do because they visualize stuff. In other words,
those smart people.
That's why I leave the Redskin games when I attend Redskin home games at the end of the third quarter, so I can just listen to Sonny and Sam because I know what it looks like on the field when they describe it to me.
Well, Bruce, I was thinking about how you leave games early last night.
Always.
I was watching the Notre Dame Louisville.
Not always, but I'd say 95% of the time.
I was watching a Notre Dame Louisville game last night, and all these people were leaving with like a little over a minute left to go. It was at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is down. I think they were down 10 or 12, something like that.
I heard about that game. Was that a big finish?
Well, they come back.
Yeah.
The point guard scores 12 points in the last like 80 seconds or something ridiculous.
Right.
They go to 5 overtimes. The guy, Sherman, transfer from Michigan State, he hadn't seen minutes in the last 4 of 6 games.
Right.
Didn't even see time. Didn't even see the floor until the first overtime, this guy Sherman. He ended up with 17 points and I think 4 or 5 rebounds and had the tip in to go into the 5th overtime. The game was insane.
They might want to play the guy a little bit more.
Meanwhile, there's like 3 guys in the stands going, "This is awesome."
it was ridiculous, man. Well, I'm sure some of the students left, but the majority of the student section was still there, which was pretty cool. So,
the only reason that I leave I never leave a Super Bowl early. I left one early. I left Minnesota when the Redskins just beat the crap out of the Bills, and there was a blizzard outside, and I wanted to get on the bus early to make sure all my people got on the buses. I had like 300, 400 people there. That was different. But most Super Bowls, I stay till the end because you can't get anywhere anyway. And the buses don't leave till everybody's on them. So you might as well just chill out and watch the festival. You know, they always, all the confetti, the trophy, the crap, all that. That's kind of fun. But really, Super Bowls are anticlimactic unless they're very, very exciting. Now, this one got exciting because as San Francisco went down the field on their last drive, right, what did they do? They got down the field too fast. And I really believed that John Harbaugh was thinking, and Roy, you correct me if you think I'm wrong.
Okay.
He was thinking, if they get down to the 2, we may just let them score so we've got 2.5, 3 minutes left. That way, if we go down the field, we've got all the time we need to score and beat these guys. Because I thought when they handed the ball off to Gore and he ran, 26 yards around left end? Uh-huh. I thought Gore slowed down on purpose a little bit. If you remember, he barely stepped out of bounds. He didn't even get hit hardly. But my point was, is when he went that deep with that play, I'm like, please don't score on the next play. Because then Flacco's going to take him down. Neither defense could stop the other offense. Don't you agree?
Towards the end of the game, it looked like.
Yeah, and you know what? That's how some of the best games ever. This morning on NFL Network was the Carolina Panther-New England Patriot game. Same deal. Carolina scored. Jake Delhomme, threw a touchdown pass to Steve Smith with 1:08 left. That's all Tom Brady needed to get in field goal range and kick a field goal.
How about the Rams-Titans Super Bowl with Dyson, the half-yard short stretch at the end of the game?
Well, that was fourth down, too.
Yeah.
That was fourth down. I mean, they had plenty of time. They just didn't get the ball in the end zone.
Oh, I'm just saying.
If Steve McNair, God rest his soul, if Steve McNair runs that ball, they win. Uh-huh. Because no one was going to tackle McNair. From 9 yards out, it ain't going to happen. He's going to run over the first 3 guys. And really,
that was great. I mean,
everybody was covered. That guy was covered, tackled at
that was a great Super Bowl.
Anyway, Roy, you sound like one of the chipmunks right now. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm Bruce Hall. I'm listening to Alvin, one of the original chipmunks. And, anyway, the game ends.
Why? Wait, I have another conspiracy theory for you. During the blackout, the two coaches talked. They even said,
"Do I look like I can pass a test?" This isn't a test, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. This isn't one coach leaves. This is train station. they talked during the middle of the in the middle of the field during the blackout. Do you think that John talked to Jim and said, "Hey, just don't make me look bad. You're killing me here."
They didn't. No, that neither one of them left the sidelines.
No, they talked because
they did.
Yes, they definitely talked in the middle because.
So
one
what
of
do you think? What do you think Johnny said? Johnny said, "Hey, I'll put my defense to sleep. Don't worry about it, Jimmy."
Or maybe it's the other
no
one saying.
No way. Those guys hate to lose. They're not going to lose to each other. No, I bet they were going, who pulled the plug? You think it was Goodell? You know, John, hey, Roy.
Yeah.
Remember how upset John Harbaugh got talking to that official? Don't you think he was saying, did one of you bleep pull the bleeping bleep?
Well, they actually showed what Jim said.
What did he say?
Said,
was there an F word involved?
He said, "Mom, somebody turn the lights out. Tell John to turn the lights back on.
He won't give me the ball.
He won't give me the ball."
That probably will end up being one of the things. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Roy Edwards on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I'm Bruce Hall, just listening to Roy and Matt today. Hey, listen. So anyway, worst, in my opinion, 4 play calls ever at the end of a Super Bowl. It's 1st and goal from the 7. San Francisco has the ball on the 7-yard line. What are they doing, Roy? They're running the ball down the Ravens' defense's throat. The first thing they do is what? After they hand it to the kid that fumbled the ball from Oregon, and he gets 2 yards. Now they look to the sidelines for the play, listen for the play over the, you know, I don't think they could hear. It was getting real loud because there were – probably 75% Raven fans there, 25% San Francisco fans. Seriously, Ravens traveled, San Francisco didn't. Everybody talked about that. So it was kind of like a Ravens home game almost, and it was very loud. So what happens? The play doesn't get in time. They burn a timeout and give 2-minute break to a team that couldn't stand up. They were so tired. So that's bad to begin with if you're a football coach. Okay? Now it's 2nd and 5. Why don't you spread everybody out and put Frank Gore in the backfield and run a belly option? You either give it to him or you keep it if you're Kaepernick, right? What do? They roll him out and throw an incomplete pass. Then they roll him out again and throw an incomplete pass. And then on 4th down, they get held. Yeah, he was held. But they're not going to call it on 4th down. They might have called it on 3rd down.
I don't think he
was. Oh, he was held, trust me. Well, I mean, I don't care what you say. He grabbed his shoulders.
Yeah, but the ball's at the 5.
You're a Raven fan. Shut up. No, you live in Baltimore. You're ridiculous. He held him. You bet on him. I know you're a Raven fan.
I bet on them, yeah, because it was the smart
But you're a Raven fan. You have an SMC Baltimore. You can't say you're not a Ravens fan.
I'm not a Ravens fan.
Yes, you are.
I have an SMC Baltimore, but I have an SMC.
You're a liar. You're a liar. He's a liar.
He was at the ball was snapped at the 5-yard line. There's
yeah,
a
but
five,
my point is this: could you have 3 worse call plays than that?
I mean, was it a questionable call? Yes, but
oh no, I'm not talking about the holding. I don't care about the holding. The only person that cared about the holding was Jimmy Harbaugh.
Okay, so you're talking about the play calling.
I'm talking the play calling sucked. He deserved to lose. Listen to me, Roy. Jimmy deserved to lose because those calls had to be approved by Jimmy. If Jimmy didn't even call, if he didn't call him himself, he approved him.
Yeah, well,
you would never. Hey, I would have called another timeout and go. Except can't call 2 timeouts in a row. I would have run the ball 3 times. And you know, if I don't get in, I don't deserve to win.
Well, Gore, you know, he rushes for 33 yards, gets you in.
Never touches the ball again.
Exactly, and then you don't get a ball. You give it to Michael James.
What is that?
I don't understand that.
You know, if they were going to burn a timeout, that would have been the time to burn it.
Yeah.
And just get organized and go, here's what we're going to do. This is smart.
We're going to let Gore catch his breath, and he's going to get the ball.
Exactly.
At least on 1st or 2nd down. I understand throwing the ball on 3rd and 4th down, but you have to at least get the ball to your horse.
Well, everybody, including players for San Francisco, didn't like the calls. And, you know, and it was really like Clark Judge and I, we were talking to each other every second on Twitter. Both of us agreed. Horrible play calling. And you know what? I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that when the opposing team has their hands on their knees and they're dying of exhaustion, you run the ball. You don't put it in the air. You give the corners a shot there. You got to throw a perfect pass there. When you hand the ball off or don't hand it off, if Kaepernick keeps it, you don't have to worry about anything. You just run the ball in. I just think that it was one of the most ridiculous. And don't get me wrong, second half, they called some good plays on the San Francisco side because they went up and down the field. What did you think happened to the Baltimore offense in the second half, Roy? Because they really did seem to kind of shut down.
Well, I think they went a little bit conservative. I mean,
which is usually a mistake, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Aside from the Jacoby Jones big play return touchdown, there really wasn't much that went right for the Baltimore offense in the second half. Did they score? I don't think they scored a touchdown. That was the only touchdown in the second half that they scored was the Jacoby Jones punt return. They had a couple field goals in there. They got a couple, Rice got going a little bit.
He put the ball on the ground too. They brought their backup running back in. Ray Rice has done that all season long. He's put the ball on the ground for a change. All right, we're up against the break. We got about half a minute to a minute. Do you want to think about this, or do you want to jump out there and give me your Super Bowl pair right now?
For next year?
Yeah, just right now. We're calling it today. Who do you think's going to be there?
You got to give me through the break.
All right, let's do it on the other side of the break, okay? Can we do that? And then I've graded the coaches and the teams, most of them, and I want to see what you think about it. We'll talk about that at the other side of the break for sure. Oh, I love this song. Now, dig this, baby. Jimi Hendrix. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to AM 1230 WFAS. I am the only one, a burning desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I'm Bruce Hall. I'm back. Roy's on the he's on the line with us. Roy, you know what? Let's go. Let's do this next segment, and then we'll pick. Because okay. I might touch some stuff that might have something to do with who we pick. I mean, I know who one of my picks is. I'm still A or B on the AFC. But let's talk about the best coaching grades for the season. I gave Johnny Harbaugh an A. Not only because, how can you not give John an A for the season that the Ravens put in?
Yeah.
With injuries, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they lost Ray Lewis for how many games? Six, seven?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, they got Terrell Suggs back, what, midway?
Yeah.
He wasn't 100% even in the Super Bowl. You know, they had corner problems. They weren't really sure what to do. Ed Reed was hurt off and on. He played with a bad ankle most of the time. Offensive line, you know, they had to move guys around because they had an injury in their offensive line. And they, you know, they moved Michael Ower from the blind side. And by the way, it's Michael, don't ask me about the blind side Ower. Because evidently at media day, he almost threw a chair or something. Got real mad.
About the movie?
Yeah. He got tired of being asked about it. You know how stupid, you know, reporters are. Yeah. Hey. Well, what was that movie you were in again? So anyway, I go with John Harbaugh. I gave him an A. You know, they repeat for the first time since 2000. When Brian Billick, you know, who is one of the coaches on NFL Network, and who I'm surprised did not get another shot this year with all the openings. Are you? Didn't you think he would get a call? Because I thought Billick, not only is he a really good offensive mind,
yeah,
he's a sharp guy, man. He's like Mensa. I think he's a member of Mensa. So he's not stupid. He's really smart.
Yeah, I feel like he did get that shot with the Redskins. When they brought him in, and the Redskins went with Zorn.
God, why?
Like 4 years ago.
Jesus, Jim Zorn, I mean.
I feel like the NFL these days is going younger. They're going for the more of the college coaches. And although
well,
I
that,
agree.
That knocks me out.
I agree that Billick, you know, could coach in today's game still. I mean, do you remember when Gibbs came back and everyone said,
yeah, he wasn't very good. And you know what? Billick's 60-something. He's like 63, 64. He just doesn't look that old.
Yeah, I think that age, you know, is a red flag for a lot of coaches. They don't know how long he's going to be there. Or not coaches.
Well, there was a study.
A lot of organizations want to find the next Harbaugh, basically.
Yeah. There was a study that came out not long ago that somebody wrote up a story on. And you might have read this, Roy, because you read everything. You're like me. And I want to say it was one of those, you know, one of the CBS guys, you know, like Clark. And what he said was, over the age of like 45, the second time around for coaches, they're almost 500. I know who it was. It was somebody that does a Redskin beat reporter, because they were wondering, and this was early in the season with the Redskins, they were wondering if Shanahan was ever going to win again. And the fact of the matter was, is he didn't do so well in Denver after Elway left anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's done. But it wasn't just him. It was like 12 guys, you know, that had come back. And some of them were still coaching. Andy Reid is one of them. A lot of people think, and we'll find out really quickly, won't we, if Andy Reid's for real or not. Because if he goes out there and has 3 years and they're 500 at best, you know, Andy's probably done, you know. And it's going to be interesting to see. Anyway, number two, here's what I got. You tell me if I'm wrong. Bruce Arians / Chuck Pagano. I gave them both an A. Whatever you want to call it, it was amazing to watch these guys.
Yeah.
You never see a team go from 2-14 to 11-5. I wanted to ask, you know, our friend, you know, who's great with all of these stats, I wanted to see what he thought about this, if that was the best turnaround ever. And I'm pretty sure that he already wrote this year that it was.
You talking about Russ Baxter?
Yeah, Russell. It go from 2-14 to 11-5. That's amazing. And if you look, remember how I always remember why I loved the Ravens at home? Because Indianapolis had been overachieving all year long. If you look at their statistics, they were an okay minus team, but they were 11-5. That meant they figured out how to win close games, right?
Yeah.
But they're still not the Baltimore Ravens. And when they went to Baltimore, they not only didn't win, they didn't cover either. And that was one of the great calls I made all year. You know, it's a great story with a great future. You know, you got to ask yourself, does the ownership group, the Irsays, deserve this? And maybe they do. I don't know. You got to give Irsay some credit. He's the guy that called the shots. You know, he's a big Twitter guy, Jimmy Irsay. I love the guy, except he tweets it like the middle of the night. So if I leave my phone on, sometimes I hear that sound. But Pagano came back after cancer treatment, was there at the end of the season, you know, won a big game, then lost one. But I think they're going to be back next year. Do you give them an A, Roy?
The Colts?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Jimmy Harbaugh, I gave him an A-. And the only reason I gave him an A- was because of the last four plays of the season on offense. I gave him an A, but I gave him the minus because – you're going to have to explain that one to me. I just don't get it. A guy that sharp, that good of a coach, lost his mind for 2 or 3 minutes, right? That's where I get the minus. What do you think? Hey, no, he made a great call. Think about this, too. We didn't talk about this, but Johnny Harbaugh fired his offensive coordinator, who you and I both don't like that much anyway.
Yeah, I didn't like Cam Cameron.
Cam Cameron lost his job. And did you notice how many times Cam Cameron – thank them for firing him, and they did the best job they could, and he was so happy. Has he been picked up yet? No.
No. Well, they gave him a ring, though.
Well, they got to give him a ring. Yeah. If you play one game with him, you get a ring.
And they're still paying him. He's still in the contract.
You know what? He'll probably be on CBS or somewhere. Hell, he may make $3 or $4 million next year, you know, doing what Gruden does.
But who knows? They fired him. After that Redskins game in week 14, 15, something like
I guess when you lose to the Redskins down the road, you deserve to get fired.
But if you look across the field, you know, the other Harbaugh, Jim, who you're talking about with the 49ers, he benched Alex Smith after a game where, or at one game, he only had two incompletions.
Yeah, he had a concussion. And, so, and that's why, I mean, he didn't bench him. He couldn't play the next game, but then he benched him the next game.
Right.
And, but this was a call. Listen, but he saw what was happening in the league. They drafted him with a first-round pick anyway, Kaepernick. And they didn't get him not to get him. Plus, do you remember all of the stuff that was going on when they worked out Eli Manning and Smith found out about it? And then Smith went somewhere to interview for a job in the offseason? You know, there wasn't any love lost there. But I will say this. You don't see too many guys with a quarterback rating of 104.1 get benched that took you to an NFC championship game the year before.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd have made the move like Jimmy did, but you know what? It worked out for him.
Yeah, I mean, you're benching a number one overall.
Takes guts. Takes guts.
You didn't draft for a second-round pick out of Nevada who – you know, everyone said wasn't a conventional guy, but you drafted him. He's your guy. And it paid off.
Well, you know what? We got to see why. The guy is such an incredible athlete.
Yeah.
And has such a good arm.
And I think they'll be back next year. I think that's my NFC team to be back.
That's mine too. But you know how much I like them anyway. I picked them to win it this year. Now they're motivated to come back and play better next year.
Yeah, I bet we have the same Super Bowl.
Well, I'm not going to go there, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I bet we have the same Super Bowl.
Well, okay. Well, so you're thinking the Ravens are back?
No.
And well, that would be the same Super Bowl.
I'm saying me and you.
What do you mean?
You and I, we have the same Super Bowl projection. I'm willing.
Oh, I'm not doing that. Oh, I'm not going with Houston. Are you kidding me? They choked big time, man. Their whole coaching staff to me blew up. They just blew up. They did. They blew up. They're not capable, and it's Kubiak. Remember how many years Kubiak was 500? He was 8-8, 3 years in a row? And I'm thinking, boy, they better win this year. And they did, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they won last year,
but I don't.
I mean, they were the number one team in the league, power ranking wise, for weeks. They were the number one team in the league both this year.
Matt Schaub looked horrible.
I don't know. He's a Pro Bowler.
But everybody gets to go to the Pro Bowl, for Christ's sake, because five quarterbacks decide they don't want to go. Bruce Hall, and all I'm doing is telling the truth here.
Yeah,
all right, let's talk about the next guy. Oh, you know what? We've got 1 minute, and this is all I want to talk about, the cheater. Bill Belichick. I gave him a B.
You think he'll be back next year?
Oh, no, I don't know if he'll be back in the game. I haven't decided yet. But for the first time in 11 years, the Patriots lost three games at home.
Yeah.
Well, what does that say? Maybe they're not cheating anymore. I bet they are, and they still can't win. Did you see how their defense just looked like they got banged up? As soon as Chung got hurt, they were done. I mean, he was their leading tackler, and he went out in the first quarter, and they couldn't tackle anybody.
If the Patriots played in any other division, I would say that they were not going to make the playoffs.
I agree with you, Roy. I agree. Roy, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute on AM 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. This is Bruce Hall. I got Roy Edwards on the line. Roy, I'm going to sprint through these coaches so we can get to the teams, and you and I are going to pick who we like. Just want to say shout out to Bruce Bochy of the San Francisco Giants. Pitchers and catchers report this week. They'll be in Scottsdale. They've won two out of the last three World Series. And I told Bruce to be listening this morning. Bruce, I'm going to have you on next week. That should be a heck of an interview. They haven't really lost anybody, the Giants. And we're going to talk a little baseball, probably a lot more baseball next week. Because when everybody goes to spring training, guess who shows up? All the beat reporters. So it'll be fun. Roy, Let me go back right now to the league real quick. The NFL, the league, Mr. Goodell's league. Greg Schiano. We got to report. We have to record something like that. A guy that I'm not crazy about personally, but he gets a B because besides one game where they got blown out 41-0, they were in every game this year. And they're going to be better next year. Mike McCarthy, you know, if he had a defense, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers might have had a chance. Their defense was pathetic.
Yeah,
and they had too many injuries to their key people. You know, I mean, when Woodson is out and, you know, their big pass rushing linebacker, who's on TV 1,000 times every day, Clay Matthews, they were both 50-60% most of the year. That's going to hurt you. And they got the crap kicked out of them by a pretty good San Francisco team. Tom Coughlin, I got to give Tom a C. You know, I never questioned Tom's effort, but this year I questioned the last couple of games. To me, he just looked like he gave up. And I don't blame him because it looked like the team quit on him.
Well, the Giants are blowing up right now.
I know. Well, they got to. They don't have the right guys in place.
OC Umeniora gets released. I mean, there's big news coming out of the Giants.
And you know what? It's just going to get worse. Mike Smith. This is an interesting guy. Guy has a great record in the NFL as a head coach. Even a better record at home in Atlanta, but I can't give him an A because of just the way they melted down late again. You know, he's got a phenomenal offense, but the defense needs some work. And for some reason, you know, Matt Ryan just can't pull it off. Roy, what do you think?
Do you think
he's not an A? He's a B.
I think that if the Falcons want to have a shot next season, that they're going to have to find a way to keep Tony Gonzalez around.
All right, and my last pick, and this isn't tough, I gave Rex Ryan an F. Because do I even really need to explain that? How does this guy have a job, Roy?
I don't know if it's an F. I don't agree with
that. I gave him an F. Well, you'd have to give him at least a D. You can't give him a C- with a 6-10 team when he's telling you every week he's going to the Super Bowl.
I think it's a D+. I mean, his two best players.
I'm a little harder grader than you.
His two best players are gone for the season.
Yeah. So,
and in week, what was it, 15, with two games left to
play.
So
you think they're going to be back next year?
I think this year they were 6-10, yes, but they were in serious playoff position come week 15. If they had beaten the Tennessee Titans on Monday night or Sunday night, whatever that was,
right,
then maybe we could be talking about how in the world the New York Jets got into the postseason with an 8-8 record. But we're not. We're talking about how how he got an F. So, look, you lose Santonio Holmes. He's your best offensive player.
Right.
You lose Darrell Revis, who's your best defensive player.
Right.
So what else do you really have there? You didn't. You had a very weak receiving core going into the year to begin with. You have Mark Butt-Tackle Sanchez as your quarterback.
I thought you liked Sanchez. I can never figure you out, Roy. Sometimes you say he's okay. Sometimes you don't like him. What is it?
He's okay.
Yeah, he's a backup. He's probably the highest draft pick. Well, who does he remind you of?
Joe Flacco.
No, he's nowhere near Joe. Oh, God, Joe Flacco's so much better than him.
Nope. Look at their numbers. They're the exact
same.
Oh,
stop it.
We had Russell Baxter on here last week. He said that.
Look at how much Flacco gets paid after this next year.
Well, that's because...
Hey, let's talk about something interesting, because if we talk about this cat from the Jets that Eva Longoria dumped. I mean, Eva Longoria dumped him. Isn't she like 60? Anyway,
That means he might have a good season next year because Tony Parker is leading the Spurs to the best record in the West.
Listen, so. Mike Piazza. Yeah, but I heard that he didn't even score with her. Anyway, Mike Piazza's book comes out. Long Shot. Mike Piazza has written a book. He denies using steroids, even though he does admit that he used Andro for a while. Remember Andro with a long name at the end of it? It is something that was legal at the time that you could get over the counter. And when McGuire started using it, and then somebody found it in his locker, they started questioning it, and then the league made it illegal, and Piazza stopped using it then. He also talks about, you know, he addresses some things about Roger Clemens, you know how he studied, you know, Taekwondo for a year, because the next time Clemens was going to throw at him, he was going to go out there and beat the crap out of him. Let me just tell you something about Mike Piazza, because I know Mike a little bit. Because I've been to like two or three spring trainings when he played with San Diego, with the San Diego Padres. He was, you know, Boach loved him. Guy came to play every day. He doesn't show me the symptoms of steroids because he caught so many games. And even at the end of his career, he was catching. He wasn't, you know, he could play a little first base late in the game when they'd use his stick and want to keep him in there. But as a catcher, he was not a bad catcher. You know, he didn't throw out a high percentage of runners, but he blocked real well. He called a good game. Tommy Lasorda and his father were like best friends and as childhood friends. His dad is really pretty cool. I got to know him a little bit. I got to know his family, his friends. I like Mike. Now, he addresses in this book, Roy, and there's an article in the New York Post this morning about it, that he addresses, you know, rumors of being gay. I had heard that a long time ago about him possibly being gay, but he also dated Playboy bunnies, starlets, actresses, and generally speaking, you know, you never saw him with guys, you know, in bars or anything. In my opinion, he's one of these shy heterosexual kids. Now, Mike's married now. I'm pretty sure he's married. No, he's not. I'm thinking of Ryan Klesko. I get them mixed up. They're big, strong guys that played for Boach. But Klesko in this, I can't wait to get the book because there's got to be some great stories in that book.
Well, speaking of steroids and PEDs, did you hear what Curt Schilling came out and said this week?
Yeah. He said that guys in the locker room were doing it or something?
The Red Sox organization encouraged PED use in 2008 when he had that shoulder injury.
I believe it.
He came out and he said, at the end of my career in 2008, when I had gotten hurt, there was a conversation that I was involved in which it was brought to my attention that this is a potential path and I might want to pursue. He told Colin Cowherd on his show earlier this week.
Did they give him the phone number of the cat down in Coral Gables? You know, that's turning everybody in. I mean, look at the names. One of the big names is Cervelli. Starting catcher for the Yankees this year, Francisco Cervelli, who's a young guy, evidently has been a customer of this guy's for a while. There were other people, Gio Gonzalez, a little bit. You know, I mean, he was mentioned here and there. The big one was who? A-Rod.
Yeah.
You know,
and Melky.
And you and I both know, yeah, Melky. But Melky, on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as how the PEDs worked, was a 10. It hadn't been working for A-Rod. All he does is get bigger and slower,
yeah.
You know, and more injury prone. Now, I think, listen, this, if you talk to people in baseball, and I know a lot of people in baseball, and I'm not talking about big people. I'm talking about beat reporters. I'm talking about minor league coaches, players. Almost all of them tell you that, to a certain extent, you know, probably 20 to 30% of everybody playing is doing something. And most of them, unfortunately, are minor leaguers. Why, Roy? Because they want to get the edge and get to the majors.
Yeah.
I would also say this, and I'm not being racist when I say this. I'm being serious. It seems like a lot of the Latin American guys, it's like a lot of those guys do it. Why? Because they're in the Dominican. They're in Puerto Rico. They're in Venezuela. They're in Colombia. They're everywhere, and they want to get to the United States. The best way to get off of an island is what? Be a stud. That's why those guys don't have good walk-strikeout ratios. They swing the bat. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because nobody gets known for scoring 150 runs. They get known for hitting 40 home runs. They get known for throwing out 60% of the runner. You know what I'm saying? And the way you do that is by getting bigger, stronger, quicker, faster. And I understand that. I just don't know if they're ever going to change that where it's 0%. It's always going to be 5 or 10%, I think, even with the best testing available.
If Curt Schilling's correct, in what he says, and he's not fabricating at all. And I'm not saying that he lied. I'm saying that there might be a possibility that he kind of stretched the truth to match these headlines coming out. But if what he said is true, and that the Boston Red Sox organization in 2008 put
he used the word encouraged.
Yeah, he said that it's someone who's no longer with the team.
Wow.
But that they encouraged the use of PEDs. If he's saying that this was an organizational thing, then I think the problem is a lot deeper than just Puerto Rican leagues and people who are trying to get into the league and stuff like that. This whole testing,
right,
and this breakdown on steroids coming from the top, you know, is
let me cut you off real quick because we got 2 minutes left. Matt's giving me the V for victory sign. Ryan Braun, I called him a cheater all year. He's a cheater. Now we know he's a cheater probably. I mean, there is – and you know what? He's got nothing to say. Have you noticed that? His lawyer has nothing to say. He has nothing to say. Guess what? He's a cheater, okay? He first of all, he was found dirty. He got off because of the chain of quote-unquote evidence, the sample chain. Second of all, let me ask you this while I got you on the line. Rex Ryan gets the defensive coordinator job in New Orleans. Is that the end of his diet? Is he done? Best food in the world is right there at his fingertips.
Well, what's his name? Greg Williams gets the job.
God, he looks like he's lost 80 pounds.
Well, nobody wants to give him free food anymore.
Have you seen him? You know what? Have you seen him? He looks like he could. I mean, he looks to me like he's sick. That's how skinny he is. I mean, you know, I'm not a big Greg Williams fan, but they did reinstate him, which tells you what? He cooperated. You understand?
Yeah.
He cooperated with the league. He apologized to the league. Evidently, he's got, you know, nothing but good things to say about the league. It's a lot different kind of tune than we heard right when all this happened. You remember?
Yeah.
He was pretty nasty, wasn't he? I think maybe he was doing PEDs for a while. What do you think, Roy?
I
think Goodell turned out the lights. What do you think?
I do
too. I think he had one of his little henchmen, little butt boys, turning out the lights.
Mark Sanchez?
The butt tackle guy. Listen, it's been a great show, Roy. We should do this more often. You've been listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We'll be back next week on AM 1230 WFAS.